Blog Talk Radio.
All right, we do not have an intro, so I apologize for that ahead of time. We are as effective.
Of the Pack
the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Fly, Eagles, fly. Wrong show. Sorry, that's Little Brother shit, but I'm not against it. It was funny. I apologize if the intro has been a little wonky. We are about as effective as Cody Parkey as a field goal kicker in clutch situations, but we have a Packers-related show this evening for you. Believe it or not, there has been plenty of news outside of the NFL playoffs, and we have a special guest tonight as well, so we will start with a bang. I am your host, Jacob Westendorf. Want to wish my dad a very happy birthday tomorrow. He got an early present today. He was at Soldier Field to watch the Philadelphia Eagles hand the Chicago Bears their demise. The Chicago Bears have not won a playoff game against a team with a winning record, I believe, since 2006. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on that case. I know the Seahawks didn't have a winning record in 2010. Somebody, if you want to correct me on Twitter, feel free. I know that that's what you guys do and that's what you're here for. I'm talking too much. Joined with me, as always, is Jason Perrone. Jason, how are you this evening?
I am extra fantastic. And by the way, I just tweeted out the link to the show, if you want to share it on the Twitter. And yeah, the Bears still suck. We got confirmation of that, no doubt about it. So it is definitely a good night. And for once, although this has been your thing for a short while, but it has been exclusively your thing for a short while, Jacob, I just want to start by saying, good for you.
Oh, that is foreshadowing, my friends. Jason and I know a secret, but we can't tell it just yet. So stay tuned for that for future shows. We are also joined by a guest. His name is Joe Arrigo. Joe, I know you just told me how to pronounce your name, and I probably still freaking butchered it again, so I apologize if I did. But Joe, can you hear us, and how are you doing?
Great. You said it right. Good job. You said it right. I'm great. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. It's good to be here talking Packers football. Before we get too far into everything, give us a little bit of your background. I know you're a Packers fan. I know you're a Packers shareholder. I know you've got some connections inside the building, which is why we want to talk here tonight, obviously. But who are you? What are you doing? Those sorts of things.
Well, basically, lifelong Packers fan, born in Milwaukee, but moved to California at 4 years old. So grew up in California. After I was done kind of doing some things in life, I got into radio and worked my way up to having my own a show I did in L.A. On the Beast 980. It used to be a sports talk station before they changed formats. Moved to Vegas and do some stuff with Lotus Broadcasting, ESPN Radio, Fox Sports Radio, and now SB Nation Radio, as well as I cover UNLV and Vegas sports for Inside the Rebels with 24/7 Media.
And from a Packers standpoint, I don't want to say I discovered you, because that makes it sound like I'm the only reason that you have the credibility that you have, which isn't true. Thankfully for you, that is the case. But the first time I noticed you was late in Brett Favre's career here. There was some speculation that the Packers were pursuing Randy Moss, and I found that from you. There was also the Julius Peppers signing. That idea was first floated by you as well, or at least it was first floated from what I saw. Whether or not you were actually first on that, I apologize, I don't know. But I do know that I found that out from you as well. For a while, I read your Cover One sports blog in the off season. It was kind of a go-to for me for news, rumblings, those sorts of things. Not everything in those blogs has come true, but that's why, you know, it's a blog. And I think you would say that is the case as well. But we're glad to have you here. So we want to talk the head coaching search, obviously. You and I talked a little bit last week on the Twitter, and that's kind of how this whole idea kind of came to fruition, was to have you on here. So let's start. The big name, Joe, is Josh McDaniels. That's the only interview that McDaniels has taken is Green Bay. He declined an interview in Cincinnati, which, putting some tea leaves together, that would lead you to believe he is either staying in New England or he is going to Green Bay. Now, there have been some reports now that Josh McDaniels may leave for the Browns, but there has been no confirmed interview with the Browns just yet. Let's start from the fan side of things. As a Packers fan, Josh McDaniels has a lot of baggage that comes with him. How comfortable are you if Green Bay is to offer him the job that he will not only say yes, but follow through, which he did not do the last time around?
I mean, for me, he would be the one person that I'd be the most comfortable with out of the 11 or 12 guys that they sat down and interviewed in the first round of interviews. The reason being, he has the pedigree. He's worked with Tom Brady. He's not afraid to assert his dominance with a Hall of Fame quarterback, to let him know this is my offense, this is my team, and this is how we're going to do things. And I have rings on my finger, which is more than what you have. You have one, Aaron Rodgers. I have, what, five as the OC. I'm sorry. You're going to do what we say. I'm not worried that he would accept the job and then not have that, then renege on the job, so to speak. What happened last year with the Colts was a little bit different. I mean, if you really look at it, if he did that, that's career suicide. He'll never be able to interview or will never be a head coach at the NFL level ever again if he were to do that. So that's just kind of, to me, blatantly obvious. Two, who's to say and who really knows the reasons why he backed out of the Colts job last year? I mean, I kind of joked about it on a Facebook Live, but the scenario was, let's just say he went there because of Andrew Luck. And then started thinking about it like, man, is this quarterback, is he really going to be able to come back from this injury? And then you have Robert Kraft, and you go back, you know, then you got to deal with Jim Irsay. And that's a whole nother ballgame. I think everybody's seen his little speech yesterday, and I don't know if he's back on the sauce or not, but Jim Irsay is a different character. And then he goes back to New England, he's clearing out his office, and let's say Robert Kraft comes in and says, Josh, hey, let me talk to you. You know, we really want to keep you here. We know there's only a few openings that you really would really want to take, one with quarterbacks already in place for the most part. Why don't we make you the highest paid offensive coordinator and head coach in waiting when Bill is going to retire? Because that could be in the next few years. And plus, you know, I really don't want to send you down there to Indianapolis. I really don't want you to go to India and work there. And maybe McDaniels got Kofi. Maybe Irsay has said something to him, excuse me, privately, that kind of irked him. You never really know what was really going on behind closed doors. It all worked out for the best for everybody. If you look at the Colts, Frank Wright has done a fantastic job there. Eberflus, who was McDaniels' choice for defensive coordinator, he's arguably the best defensive. I mean, he's probably going to win coordinator of the year on the NFL level for the work that he's done with the Colts defense. They hit a home run with their draft picks. It just kind of worked out for the Colts, and McDaniels could fall into a situation where he goes and works with a person he has a relationship in Brian Gutekunst, and he's able to work with him and kind of grow and go to a situation. You have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback. I mean, to me, Rodgers is the best quarterback in the NFL, and that's me taking off my fan goggles just with his arm talent and things that he's able to do. He's also probably the most difficult to coach, but most people that are that gifted are difficult. And that's something that McDaniels, I think, excels in, is dealing with a quarterback that has had a lot of success, knows his place in the pantheon of NFL history, and is in a place where, you know, he knows we need to win now. And I think some of these coaches, I mean, with the younger coach like LaFleur, for instance, who they interviewed, he's 39 years old, 38, 39 years old. He's never been, I mean, this is his second year coordinating. I don't see him as that guy that really, I'm not wowed by him, I guess. He's not a guy that wows me. Pete Carmichael, okay, but how much of that is him calling plays and how much of that is Sean Payton calling plays? And then if you look at Adam Gase, that intrigues me, but my fear with Adam Gase is you're looking at a guy who had success with Peyton Manning, had some success with Jay Cutler, and then he goes to Miami, and Ryan Tannehill is just not good enough, and he hasn't developed, albeit from injuries or anything else. He's still very inconsistent. I think a dark horse, the guy that intrigues me outside of McDaniels the most, though, would be Dan Campbell, the assistant head coach, tight ends coach for the Saints. The guy, just there's something about him, the way he carries himself. And I think he's going to end up being a head coach somewhere this year. I don't think it's in Green Bay, but I think he'll end up being a head coach somewhere this year and have a lot of success.
Hey, Joe, it's Jason. Hey, thanks for coming on. And, yeah, I was actually going to ask you about Campbell because I heard him. He was on one of the Wisconsin radio stations, and he is an old-school-minded guy. My question for you about Campbell is I like what I heard, but that's because I'm kind of an old school type of fan. I mean, I've been a fan of the NFL for close to 35 years now. So, I mean, I grew up watching that brand of football. But do you think – I mean, that would be great for the culture, but do you think he also checks the box of fixing the culture and also being a guy can endear himself to Aaron Rodgers and kind of get this offense back on track next year?
Well, if you look at Campbell's track record as a player, he played for Parcells, he played for Peyton. So he comes from that Parcells line of coaches, I'd like to say. And look what he did in Miami with the Mets. I mean, that was the same year that they let Joe Philbin go when they had the incognito Jonathan Martin situation. And they went 5-7 with an owner that he's in the same lines as a Daniel Snyder type owner with the way he meddles and the outrageous things that he does. I mean, he was the only owner to not vote for relocation when the Raiders are going to move to Vegas because he wanted to buy land in Oakland to make money from it. So I think he would. And also, I'd be more interested with Campbell to see what coordinators he would bring in. Now, with McDaniels, you know that he's going to be calling plays. But who would be the offensive coordinator that Campbell brings in? Who would he keep Pettin as his defensive coordinator, or would he go another direction? I think those are question marks that I would have with Campbell. But I think as a leader of men, I think he checks off all the boxes. I think he's an alpha male in the room. He's been there as a player, done that as a player, won a ring or two as a player. He's a guy that's just – there's something about him that he has that it factor, almost in a way like Bill Cowher did. Bill Cowher, when he was – I remember when he was coming out as a head coach, there was something about him. He's just a special teams coach. That was he's just the Brown special teams coach. And then he goes to Pittsburgh, and there's just something about him that guys gravitate to. And I think Dan Campbell has that factor. And I do like a little bit of the old school mentality because I think you have to have that in today's NFL. Far too often, teams try to be cute on the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball. It's one thing to be innovative, but it's another thing to be too cute and try to be the smartest guy in the room. I think Campbell will alleviate that, or would be the type of guy that would alleviate that and say, we're going out there, we're going to play football this way, and we're going to win this way, and reestablish a culture that I think in some ways, Green Bay got away from in the last couple of years under Mike McCarthy, sadly, who I think, honestly, is a perfect fit for Cleveland or the Jets. I mean, any of the openings I think McCarthy would be great at. I'm a big fan of McCarthy, to be honest with you, and I am biased in saying that. But I think Campbell can reestablish order within 1-2-6-5 Lombardi.
Yeah, that's kind of the Packers have had a bit of a pattern with their head coaching interviews. One, you know, they have the young offensive hotshot, Josh McDaniels, Matt LaFleur, Adam Gase, guys of that ilk. And then you have the, what's the word I want to use? Culture establishing guys, Dan Campbell, Mike Munchak, for example, which I just threw up in my mouth trying to spit out Mike Munchak. But I'm friends with Titans fans. I can't watch that. I'm sorry. I'm sure Mike Munchak's a great coach. I just don't want him to be the coach in Green Bay, especially not the head coach. So what, I mean, Joe, what, if anything, of the guys they've interviewed, what does this say that, you know, because there's been some speculation that Green Bay could go with a defensive coach like, say, Vic Fangio or Eberflus from Indianapolis or somebody like that, and essentially just let Aaron Rodgers be Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. Well, Brady doesn't really run the offense like that, but Peyton Manning and just run the offense on his own. Is that something – because that, to me, I think would be a mistake. And I'm not saying hiring a defensive coach would be a mistake, but essentially letting the quarterback run the offense because – you know, you had those stories come out this week that Rodgers basically looked at plays McCarthy called and said, no, we're not doing that. And, I mean, that's kind of a disconnect, and it leads to a trickle-down effect in the locker room, at least in my opinion. Do you think that – I know the trend is young offensive-minded guy, but do you really think that is the best action for Green Bay going forward? And if so, or why, or why not?
Well, I think if you want to go with a defensive guy, let's alleviate Vic Fangio and Eberflus, or I can't pronounce that dude's name, but Fangio is only interviewing for two jobs, and Eberflus interviewing Cleveland today, and there's no other meetings for him going forward, at least for until the Colts get bounced from the playoffs. So I don't think either one of them are on the docket in terms of interview. I think Green Bay is ready to move on to round. In fact, I know the Packers are ready to move on to round two of the interview process. To me, Brian Flores is a guy that I'm – out of all the defensive guys, I really, really like. And the reason being is he has the pedigree because he was on the personnel side. And then he goes into being a linebacker coach and kind of becomes the de facto defensive coordinator under Belichick. But the fact that he knows both sides of it, the personnel side and the coaching side, I think that's invaluable. He'll know what to look for in certain guys. I think if he really likes a player there, and he's banging the table for somebody, I think that's gonna carry a little more weight because he has been on that other side. And he's a bright young mind, honestly. In terms of offensive guys, I would say – I would agree with you in every aspect other than I don't think they're going to go a defensive route. If you look, the last defensive head coach they hired was Ray Rhodes, and he went 8-8 and he got fired. And he's a guy that was coming off success in Philadelphia, and he was a player's coach. And in a way, Ray Sherman, I believe, was the offensive coordinator for him then. And they kind of let Favre do his thing then, and we've seen how that went. I don't think they're going to make that same mistake. I don't think history is going to repeat itself in that aspect. I don't care about the age of a coach as long as, honestly, he's not old. Because he wins a ring or he's there 3 or 4 years, you're back in the same position you're in at this point. You're back to where you are today, except with your quarterback being 4 years older, and you're going to have to maybe go look for a quarterback if you haven't already drafted one. So I would like the younger coach that you have Rodgers for. I mean, this year I wouldn't draft a quarterback in this class. If I'm looking forward, there's only a couple quarterbacks I like, and I'm not taking any early. So I wouldn't really take anybody in this class. And then so next year and the year after, you're going to have better quarterback classes. That's where you can maybe draft a successor to Aaron Rodgers, and he learns, let's say, Josh McDaniel's system for the next 2 or 3 years. Now you have a situation – like you did when Rodgers took over from Brett Favre, you have a guy that knows the system, that it's a seamless transition. And you kind of seen that in New England when they drafted Garoppolo from Garoppolo to Brady, except they ended up making a move to trade one of the quarterbacks to San Francisco. And I think that kind of started the fracture in the New England, the Bill Belichick Patriot way. That was kind of the major fracture that finally came out public, that they traded one of the quarterbacks, and it may not have been the one the head coach and president wanted traded, you know. So if you really look at it, and I think McDaniels, and I think – this is what I look for, guys. when you have a Nick Saban or a Bill Belichick or even a Bill Walsh for that matter, and when he was still around coaching and still alive, when you start letting your coordinators and your most trusted assistants go become head coaches, guys that you are there with early in the morning and leaving late at night with, you know the end is coming. Now, depending on your relationship with that organization, do you want to leave that organization in a good way, or do you want to leave it where it's like, okay, you know what, we put our 20 years in here or whatever it is, we're out of here now. Now you go figure it out. You want to reboot, go right ahead. And I think that's what you're kind of seeing with New England right now. He let Patricia leave to go to Detroit. You look at McDaniels. He took the Indy job last year, decided in the 11th hour and 59 seconds, he didn't want that job. So he turns around, and now he's – look, let's be honest. If I'm a betting man and I live in Vegas and I don't gamble, all my chips are in on Josh McDaniels. He's the guy to me, and I don't think it's even close in terms of the guys that they're looking at. I think they're casting a wide net because they want to see what else is out there. But I can tell you from what I was told from people that are involved that he blew them away and wowed them in the interview on Friday, that it was one that he was like, whoa, this guy really gets it. He understands what we want to do. We're almost on the same page, lockstep with everything. And he's a guy that we feel that we can have here for another 10, 15 years. A lot if we have McCarthy for 13. They really feel that strongly about him from my understanding. I heard he hit a grand slam in the interview. A lot like Dan Campbell did with Cleveland the other day as well.
Awesome. Actually, Joe, that's a great tidbit because that was going to be my next question. Was I haven't heard anything on my end as far as how McDaniels did in the interview. And then there was the talk about Cleveland, which to me seemed a little bit like fodder and obviously wants to get the best deal for himself and the most money. And I know Jake's got a follow-up about McDaniels after mine. But my question for you is let's assume that all candidates are equal. We know that they're not. There's been some talk about concern amongst Packers fans about, you know, let's say you hire a defensive coach. The problem is do you maintain the stability and the continuity with your offensive coordinator? Because hopefully if you do that, let's say, you bring in your offensive coordinator, they do what they're supposed to do. Aaron Rodgers and the offense return to form. They light up the league. They win a Super Bowl. And you constantly have your offensive coordinator being plucked by other teams because of the success that they've had. Do you have any concerns if the Packers were to hire a defensive-minded coach? Is that a legitimate concern that seem to have heard from a lot of other fans and one that may sway? I mean, right now, obviously, it seems like McDaniels is the favorite anyway. But do you put any stock into that level of thinking there just from a continuity standpoint?
Absolutely. I mean, if let's say you hire Vic Fangio, okay, and he's going to – obviously, Mike Pettine and the guys Pettine brought in, I doubt Joe Witt will be a guy that ends up staying at that point. They all leave. And then you bring in a whole new offensive staff. You maybe keep Kampman as your offensive line coach because actually he's done a really good job with the line. And I would keep the running back coach as well. You bring in a whole new group and your offense just takes off. Now what? This guy's going to get head coaching opportunities. Now you got to bring somebody else in the following year or 2 years later. And then let's say the offense is still humming, and then that guy gets a job. I mean, at some point, that has to be a concern. It's not just always – it cannot always fall on Aaron Rodgers' shoulders like it has the last few years because of the draft and development, the staunch draft and development ways of Ted Thompson. There has to be guys like Devontae Adams that step up and make plays, like Aaron Jones and that wants to make plays, like Jamal Williams who wants to make plays. I mean, he's not his. Jamal's a grinder, Aaron's flash. You got flash and grind right there. Ground and, you know, thunder and lightning, so to speak. But you need somebody opposite Devontae. You got to get Aaron Rodgers help and guys that he feels that he can trust and believe in. If you bring in a defensive coach and you're changing coaches, that turnaround, I think that's going to hinder that in a lot of ways. Because now you may have offensive coach that maybe doesn't have – you think is the guy, but he doesn't have the juice or the balls to stand up to Aaron. I mean, at the end of the day, that's the thing. You got to have somebody to have the juice to say, Aaron, sit down and shut up. Okay, I listen to him, okay. But if you change my play again, we're going to have a problem because you being moody, pulling – look, if we're going to be honest about Aaron Rodgers, and I love Aaron Rodgers to death, Aaron Rodgers the last couple years has been Jay Cutler. Great arm talent, but mercurial, moody, poor posture and expressions on the field. Those are the same things we're criticizing Jay Cutler about. But what makes Aaron Rodgers different? Well, he won a Super Bowl, and he was funny, and he's on the commercials. But the last 2 years, that's been Aaron Rodgers, and he doesn't throw interceptions, which may not be a good thing. So you got to have somebody stand up to him. And if you go back and look at Cutler, it took coaches that were strong-willed to allow Cutler to have success. And that's where a guy like McDaniels and to a lesser form, Gase, will probably have a lot more success than somebody like, let's say, a Pagano or a Monken, who I think is a joke. As a cat, I don't know why they interviewed him. Like, you've seen Tampa Bay's offense. There may be a lot of good moving parts, but, I mean, realistically, it was a joke of an all. I'm not a big fan of that one. Or a Munchak, who I think is a leading guy in Denver, to be honest with you.
Joe, obviously this has kind of turned into the Josh McDaniels show. I mentioned last week on the podcast that I had heard inside the stadium that Aaron Rodgers' preferred choice was Josh McDaniels. Obviously you have said that you would be surprised if it wasn't him. It looks to be, as we mentioned, you know, that the tea leaves are leaning toward Josh McDaniels being the head coach. The staff is something else that I have talked about in getting a head coach in here. Because, for example, you know, Jason mentioned continuity, and you're talking about, you know, they hire Vic Fangio, and now you're talking all new defense, all new offense, and starting from scratch. If you hire a guy like – that was kind of one of my big beefs – well, one of several beefs I had with hiring Pat Fitzgerald was Pat Fitzgerald is a CEO-type head coach. And now you're talking about having to hit on a defensive coordinator – and a offensive coordinator, and not only that, but if they're successful, they're going to be gone, and they're going to have to recycle those guys in and out. Whereas at least if you hire someone with a specialty like McDaniels on offense or Fangio on defense, at least there will be some continuity there. But let's just say McDaniels is the coach. Is there any insight on whether or not he would keep Mike Patton around? And if not, you know, who are some guys that we could be looking at as his coordinators should he come to Green Bay?
From what I understand, the preference is for him to keep Patton, and he wouldn't be adverse to that. He would that maybe, but he would want to have a say so with some of the other guys that are on the staff. I think if McDaniels has hired Joe Witt and Patton have jobs, and I think there may be another couple guys on the defensive side that will keep their jobs, but there may be a guy added or whatnot. If it's not Patton, the rumor going around now is if Bruce Arians gets the job in Tampa Bay, like a lot of people are starting to expect. A name to watch in Green Bay and Tampa Bay, if Patton is not around, is Todd Bowles, as a coming in as a defensive coordinator. That's one that I think if you look at everything, it kind of makes sense. It's another former head coach that doesn't necessarily have to that Josh can kind of rely on a little bit and go to. And I think with McDaniels, the biggest knock on him is he felt like he had to do everything in Denver. And he's only there, what, he's got fired halfway into his second year, or after his second year, or halfway into it or whatnot. When you look at McDaniels overall, I'll equate it to all of us, right? We all have been, I would assume, at some point been a supervisor at a job. And the first time you're a supervisor, you may know procedures and protocol, but it's still a feeling out process. What type of leader do you want to be? And he tried to be so Bill Belichick, but he's not Bill. He had to find his own way. And I think that's what he's done over the last few years. He's kind of found his way as a coach in terms of what I would do differently and what moves I could make. And that's just growth as a person. And yes, I felt horrible last year. I mean, when he got the job in Indy, I thought it was a tremendous hire for the Colts. And then when he decided against it, the people I didn't feel bad for Josh McDaniels. I didn't feel happy for New England. I felt bad for the guys and their families that he brought over that didn't even get a chance, that left other jobs and moved cross country in some cases to take those jobs. And then some of them may have been out of a job. I think that's the only really regrettable thing about McDaniels and Indy is the coaching side of it. like the guys that he kind of just left high and dry. But if you look at McDaniels as a whole, what he's done with his staffs in the past, how many former head coaches have been on his staff? How many high-profile coordinators have been on his staffs, guys that are now ascending through the ranks? I mean, he does a really good job of putting staffs together. And that's something that comes to being respected in league circles, knowing what you're looking for, identifying them in the coaching staff. And I think it's also big on communication. Every one of the guys he's brought in as coaches in the past have been big on communication. They're all able to communicate verbally to their players and kind of get things across to them. And I think even McDaniels has really improved on that himself. So I think McDaniels, his plan, from my understanding, he's very open and not against keeping Penton. He'd be very open, especially with the type of response that defense had with Penton this year. So I think Penton and Witt in particular are two guys that would ideally stay on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, I have no idea, but in terms of the guys that he's talked about, but I do know a lot of that offense, there's going to be a lot of turnover with that offensive staff. It wouldn't surprise me if all but one or two coaches would be let go from the current offensive staff.
Which is a positive. I think every Packers fan, pundit, everything wants to see Aaron Rodgers and the offense in general in a new system. And you can't do that if you're keeping, like, say they hire McDaniels, cool, but you keep the same coaches. You know, these coaches that have been here in Green Bay, McCarthy, he brought in these new guys, quote unquote, and really they were just guys who have been here before. Joe Philbin, for example. Again, Philbin's a great guy. I don't want to make it sound like I'm bashing him, but I mean, hiring him and then trying to say they were scrubbing the playbook was really an insult to the intelligence of the fan base, in my opinion. And I said that at the time. So that's not all that surprising. Joe, I've appreciated your insight. We've appreciated your insight. I know we've gotten a lot of listeners from the Vegas area. Real quick, I have two questions. One will be a one-word answer. Where do the Raiders play next season?
San Francisco at AT&T Park.
Okay, that's interesting just because I got friends that are Raiders fans, and I tend to root for the Raiders when they're not playing the Packers, but that's something to keep an eye on. The other one I have is, you know, we mentioned Mike McCarthy, and, you know, not just the type of coach he is, but the type of guy he is. I told a story here right after he got fired about how I looked him in the eye after the Packers drafted Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and asked him a question. He kind of smiled. I think he knew that I was a new guy. Gave me a good thought out answer. And then I think it was a year later, saw me on the side at Lambeau Field and came up to me after a game and basically said, hey, I hope things are still going well for you. And for him to remember, and I don't 100% for sure know that he remembered me, but it sure felt like that he did. I think that speaks a lot to his personality and the type of guy that he is. Joe, I know you have, because you've told me this story, but what's your best Mike McCarthy story before we let you go here?
It was at the owners' meetings when they voted on relocation for the Raiders. I was there covering it for 24/7 Sports, as well as for a local TV affiliate where I was their Raiders insider during the relocation process. And after the first day of the owners' meetings, the first official day, that Monday, there's always a big mixer that takes place. And so it starts at like 6 o'clock or so, somewhere around there in the late evening. So I went out there, and the first person I ran into a little after six, because I wasn't staying at the hotel, so I just kind of hung around. I wasn't going to go to my hotel to go back. This was too much driving. So first person I ran into was Ted Thompson. And Ted was actually really funny. And I had a good like 15, 20 minute conversation with him. And as the night went on, I was like, you know, it'd be really cool if I talked to Mike McCarthy. I've talked to everybody else I wanted to talk to. I've talked to former general managers of organizations that I know and guys with other organizations. And I went back to get another drink, and I seen Ted off to the side. John Dorsey, I should say, starts walking up and said hi to me, and Ted in his typical Ted drawl, hey, Joe, you still here? And he's double-fisting Bud Lights while he says this to me. And I go, "You're still here, Teddy?" And he started to laugh, and we wish each other a good night. I wished him great on a good luck on the season in the draft, and I walked away. And I went and started talking to another friend who's in the NFL, and he's a head coach, and we're having a conversation, me, him, and his wife, and some other people. And I happened to turn, and I seen Mike and his daughter walking away, like they're going to get ready to leave. So I said, "This is my opportunity to catch them." So I went over to him, and I kind of had my tie on, kind of like at a wedding when, at this point, my tie, I just kind of had it really loose. And I said, "Mike," and I introduced myself, and he goes, "Oh, okay." And we started talking, and then kind of asked what I did, and I told him I was there covering the relocation and asked him his thoughts. And he goes, "You know, I really feel bad for the city of Oakland. I really think they belong in Oakland. You know, I think it's kind of not bad for the NFL, but I actually would have preferred them to stay in Oakland." But he's, "I love the tie. It's a great Vegas tie." And then he goes, "Wait, you mentioned you coach football in Vegas." I said, "Yeah, I'm a high school football coach." And we sat for another like 25 to 40 minutes just talking ball. I mean, he wanted to know everything about what offense we ran, what defense we ran. We talked philosophy on offense. And we're going back and forth just having this conversation. And it was towards the end of it, I kind of noticed some people were starting to come up. And they're probably more fans than they were, media people or people in the NFL. And I can kind of tell his daughter was getting tired. And I said, "Mike, you know what? I appreciate you taking, you know, this 40, 45 minutes or whatever it is to have this conversation with me. And, you know, I'm really rooting for you. I respect you. I know a few guys that played for you here in Green Bay. And they have nothing but great things to say about you." And he looks me in my eye and goes, "Look, when you come to Green Bay, go ahead and come to the office and let me know that you're in town. Get a hold of me. Let me know you're in town. I'm going to give you the tour of Lambeau Field. That it's not what people pay for. I'll take you into the locker room, into the offices. I'll let you see some things that nobody else has seen." And I appreciated that. And, man, it was amazing. Just, I seen him one more time when I went there for my cousin's wedding a couple of Julys ago. He and I had I took the tour, and it was amazing. Just the fact that he remembered me about a year later, year and a half later, and asked me about my children, asked me how we did in the season. It was really cool to see and to have that conversation with Mike. And again, I don't think there's a coach in professional football, and I've known Pete Carroll a long time and a few other guys that I had the pleasure to cover in Los Angeles and other places. I haven't met a man that's like Mike McCarthy, who's a genuine dude and genuinely cares about the people he comes into contact with. And that's just one story. I heard another story. That's my story, but I heard another story from a good friend of mine that used to work at a local, used to work on Mike's show. And all the shows for the Packers for that, all the Packers head coaching shows. And he shared to me a story that one day Mike was very appreciative of the video staff that the Packers have. And in the offseason said, "We're having a barbecue, come on over." And he was out there grilling and drinking beers and hanging out with all the people from the video staff. He wasn't just there like, "Hey, guys, have fun." He's out there cooking for them and having drinks with them. And that's the kind of man Mike McCarthy is. And to be very forthright, it was to hear Mercedes Lewis's comments about Aaron Rodgers changing the plays. In a way, that was kind of, I mean, I think everybody knew it was happening. I think everybody kind of they never really wanted to admit it. But to hear it out of a player's mouth that was just there playing with them, it kind of is, it really is disheartening, because how many bullets did Mike McCarthy have to take for Ted Thompson or for Aaron Rodgers or for other people in the organization because some people weren't accountable and didn't want to be accountable for their actions. Other people just didn't want to deal with the media and just chose to put their head in the sand and just do their job, which, again, you're all entitled to your prerogative, but how many bullets did Mike have to take for these guys? And I think that, again, is the type of man and coach that you have. That's not a guy that I want to let go. Now, I'm not saying it was wrong to fire Mike McCarthy. I do think there needed to be a change, and you're not going to get rid of the face of your franchise, arguably, and I say this arguably, the greatest quarterback in franchise history. Whether or not he is, that's to each of their own opinions. You're not going to get rid of him with how much you just paid him this offseason. So Mike was a sacrificial lamb in a lot of ways, in my opinion. And wherever he ends up, if it's in Cleveland or New York, and it's only those two places this year, I think he's going to be they're going to get a hell of a coach that's going to make their teams a lot better, and they're going to be a lot more successful with him as their head coach.
Great story. I think that, you know, we've said it on this show several times. Mike McCarthy's a very good coach. By all accounts, he's a better man. Joe, based on the stories you tell, that doesn't change my opinion at all. You know, wherever McCarthy ends up, I'll always bleed green and gold. I'm a diehard Packers fan. The logo is tattooed on my leg. It is the identity that I carry here towards the Chicago area. Everybody around here knows me as Packers guy. So I bleed green and gold forever. But wherever he ends up, that'll have a little stint of brown if it's Cleveland Browns, or jet green if it's the New York Jets. Easy guy to root for, certainly. Joe, I want to thank you for coming on the show. You guys can check his stuff out. His Twitter handle is at Joe, normal spelling, Arrigo, A-R-R-I-G-O. Give him a follow. He does a lot of stuff. He's very interactive with the fans. I've talked to him quite a bit here in just the last couple of weeks. That's kind of how this all started. But that's something, Joe, that I really appreciate because, I mean, really, we're all in this to – I mean, obviously, it's a job for some. You get paid to write. You get paid to be a media member. Jason and I don't. I think at the heart of it all, the reason you get in this quote-unquote business is because you want to talk football for a living. You want to talk football just with other people. And I appreciate the conversations that you have with people. So thank you for coming on, and we will see you next time. Is there anything else that you want to add in that I may have missed before we sign off with you here?
No, you guys are great. Thank you for having me on. Love to do it again. And, man, I appreciate you taking the time tonight to have me on. I'm very, very appreciative of that. So I'm glad you guys had a happy New Year and Merry Christmas. And we'll talk more soon, hopefully.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it. That is Joe Arrigo. He's at Joe, A-R-R-I-G-O. Questions about Packers, Raiders, UNLV football, USC football. He's definitely willing to talk whatever it is you want. So, Jason, we have a lot to digest there. Really, I want to focus on the McDaniel stuff because, I mean, Jason, I really want to start with at this point. I mean, we've talked about the interviews. You and I have talked privately on a few things. Is there anyone at this – I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you think – how surprised do you think you would be if the coach was someone other than Josh McDaniels at this point?
Well, before we have this conversation with Joe, which that was a fantastic chat, great insight and some great stories. So would love to have him back on a future show. That was awesome. Before he came on this show, it would have been at least a 9. I mean, it can only be a 10 now because it just seems like McDaniels is the guy. I say that just in terms of how certain it seems that that's who they want. But if it's up to Josh McDaniels and based on what we've seen before, I mean, he's had some interesting things happen to him in his past. And this goes back 10 years to the days that he spent in Denver. Yeah. Don't forget he was with the Rams for a short stint and then back with New England and some of the issues that he's had. It may end up being his decision. And then, you know, of course the legion of those, if he doesn't end up coming to Green Bay and he opts out of it, hopefully cleanly, if he does, the legions of fans will come out of the woodwork and say, I told you so, I knew he wasn't going to do it, this and that. But it just seems like he's the guy. But, you know, Jacob, I don't know if you had heard before this was the first I had heard at all about how he did in his interview, and I'm really glad to hear that he did well. Now, I don't know if that's the team saying that because that's who they want, and of course they're going to make it sound like they're picking the best guy and the home run candidate, but do you put a lot of saying, hey, this guy nailed the interview when you know that he's their number one choice? And does that make you feel any better about him as a candidate?
Yeah, I put stock in it because if he was a bad interview, you know, I told the story a few weeks ago that last year, the Chicago Bears, they interviewed Matt Nagy and John DeFilippo. And according to a friend of mine, he said that John DeFilippo's interview was so bad that he was removed from the candidate list after his interview. And DeFilippo was their 1A choice to Matt Nagy. So they would have been fine with hiring Matt Nagy or John DeFilippo. So it does matter. I don't think the Packers would give that information out. If somebody said, hey, man, his interview sucked, like, I think the Packers, if his interview was bad, like, they may, you know, you go into these, I went into this coaching search with an idea of somebody that I wanted. Everyone did. And I think that the Packers, they're humans. They're no different. Mark Murphy, Brian Gutekunst, the guys leading the search, are no different than they probably had a list of guys that they thought, hey, we really want them. Who they were, we don't know. But to say that, hey, his interview went well, you're not hurting anything by letting that information you're not hurting anything by letting that information get out. As far as does it make me feel better, here's going to be my biggest bitch with Josh McDaniels if he is, in fact, hired. And, I mean, for those of you that follow me on Twitter, at Jacob Westendorf, if you don't, do so, because you're missing out on the most fantastic insight in the history of professional football. I am the smartest person to ever talk about the NFL. Yes, I'm kidding. My avatar is Josh McDaniels wearing a Packers hat and a Packers jacket. So with that in mind, I said I was resigning to myself to what I feel is inevitable. And I've said before, I don't want Josh McDaniels to be the head coach. And here's kind of my reasoning was that I know, you know, like Joe said, McDaniels knows that if he takes this job and bails, like he did last year, he will never get a head coach interview ever again outside of New England. So he better be very sure he's going to be the head coach of New England if he pulls a stunt like that again. Now, with that in mind, there's another way he could end up somewhere else again. Let's say, here's my concern, and I've said this before too. If Josh McDaniels takes this job, and let's just say next year, because I think Brady and Belichick will come back for at least one more go-around. Maybe Belichick for longer, I don't know. Let's just say they come back and then they announce, you know, in December, they're retiring at the end of the season, however that goes, whether it's, you know, with another Super Bowl championship, a flame out in the playoffs or missing the playoffs altogether, which if they do that, I'll buy you guys a boat because I can't picture that with that shitty division that they're in. But if he does that, Robert Kraft is going to make a phone call and call Josh McDaniels' reps. Do I feel confident that Josh McDaniels would say, hey, Mr. Kraft, I appreciate everything you've done for me. You know, I owe some of my career to you. I am 100% committed to the Green Bay Packers. No, I don't. And I don't want to be in the same position. Like, I want the Packers to nail this hire for a lot of reasons. Another of which being looking for a new head coach sucks. Like, I mean, that probably means your team didn't. It's not like, you know, the teams that are playing this weekend in the NFL playoffs aren't playing because they fired their head coach midseason. This isn't like hockey or basketball where stuff like that happens. If you're firing your head coach, it's probably because your team sucked or didn't meet expectations or something or another. I don't want to be in this position again. And I'm reminded, you know, this era of Packers football reminds me a little bit, not a lot of it, but a little bit of when Mike Holmgren exited Green Bay. They hired Ray Rhodes, and 1 year later they were in the same exact position of trying to hire another head coach because Ray Rhodes was very clearly not the right man for the job. The Packers finished 8-8. He was fired unceremoniously after the game was over, and Mike Sherman took over after that. I got a lot of issues with Mike Sherman, but that's besides the point at this point. So that would be my concern at this point is that I don't – even if McDaniels comes to Green Bay, and if he turns down – if he's offered the job and turns it down, that's fine. I mean, that's – understandable if that happens, but if he comes and then leaves a year later, that's something I think that is a legitimate concern. Now, from a football standpoint, I've told you guys before, from a football standpoint, there's not a whole lot wrong with McDaniels. The Patriots offense is consistently toward the top of the league in every statistical measure you can think of. Obviously, some of that has to do with Tom Brady being their quarterback, but he would have a better quarterback in Green Bay were he to come here. So from that standpoint, I don't think there's a problem. I think that, you know, people have earned second chances. Josh McDaniels struggling in Denver, that's not that big of a deal to me personally. It's a small concern, but not a big one. But I've said it before, you know, he's a snake, he's a weenie, whatever, you know, immature term you want me to throw out, I've said that before. So I still have my concerns. If you ask me right now, who would I want Green Bay to hire off of who they've interviewed? None of these guys are slam dunks. That's why they're not – if they were a slam dunk, they would currently be a head coach. You know, that's why Bill Belichick doesn't get fired. Sean Payton doesn't get fired. Guys that you would say are slam dunk hires don't get fired. That's why these guys are not head coaches. If I had to pick one of that interview list, I would probably lean towards Adam Gase. just because I know he did a good job here in Chicago with Jay Cutler. And Jay Cutler, I've joked often that he is the fourth best quarterback in the history of the Green Bay Packers. He's never played a snap for the Packers. So that kind of leads you to some pretty logical conclusions there. And Jay Cutler had his best season with Adam Gase. So if I had to pick one, that would be the one. Jason, is there somebody on this list of guys they've interviewed? And there's a bunch. Is there somebody that you think you have a preference for at this point in time?
I don't really know a lot about all of them to educatedly say one and give you a bunch of reasons why. Joe talked about Dan Campbell, and I like Dan Campbell a lot, but, you know, and I said why. It's because I'm an old-school thinker, and I like the way that he approaches the game. You know, he wants the game to be violent. He wants football players. He wants guys that play angry, pissed off, downhill, old school. I don't know, and it doesn't sound like he's going to be a front runner, but you never know. You never know what's going to happen. Flores, just because of the ties to the Patriots, and I've heard that he's eventually going to be a head coach in this league, so that doesn't necessarily mean that that has to be right now or that all the people that think that are correct, but those are two candidates that I can point to and say, okay, here's why I think these guys might be good for the job. I want them to pick whoever's going to come in and help this offense get going and do what it needs to do, because I don't think, you know, there's been this debate about whether or not this roster has enough talent. And I'm writing a piece for Cheesehead TV tomorrow that's going to go up first thing, so check that out. And it's going to kind of address the roster and the types of players that the Packers have and that they don't have. And I don't necessarily know that I believe there's a huge talent deficiency, but whoever they pick has to come in here and maximize all of it on both sides of the ball. And they've got to get this locker room on one page and get everybody committed to the cause. I mean, look at what Matt Nagy did with the Bears. Now, we haven't talked about it because this is not a Bears show, but we're doing this show on Sunday night. And, Jacob, if you're being kind, I'll say it. The Bears lost. They lost to the Eagles in one of the worst fashions possible. I mean, I joke all the time about how the Packers always let the same things befuddle them over and over again. Go look up the Bears season this year and then take a look at how they lost. And it will only make too much sense that it ended that way. So, but Nagy had that team all singing off the same sheet. I mean, they were very dedicated to the cause. They drafted well. Roquan Smith was very good. They got Mack. They got Robinson. They took Fuller away from the Packers, which, if you want to call it that, they signed Fuller. They had a tight locker room. And I think that team is going to be an issue to contend with for many years to come. That's what the Packers need. They need to get that spark back in their locker room and have it carry over onto the field. Get football players out there, guys who can play well no matter what the scheme is, whatever the play call is. They're just good, instinctual football players. And even if everything breaks down and the offense runs a misdirection or something completely other than what the defense was prepared for, they can still handle it and not give up an explosive play every time they turn around because they're so befuddled by it.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Matt Nagy I find him to be very arrogant. I'm going to hate him for the next however long he's in Chicago, and I love that. You know, there's some comedy certainly to be had with someone like John Fox being the Bears head coach, but it is funnier if the Bears are good and they think they're good and the Packers still find a way to beat them. So that whole thing you said about finding a way to get them to sing off the same sheet, I think that matters, because I think you could see, you know, with Rodgers allegedly changing a play that McCarthy had called, and basically that speaks to everything about this team not being on the same page. That can be as simple as blown coverage assignments too, but it's apparently a very big issue in Green Bay, Wisconsin currently. So we will keep you updated all off season long on the Packers. Well, hopefully it's not all off season, but until the Packers hire a head coach, and if it's going to be Josh McDaniels, we'll keep you updated until he is officially introduced, because, well, I think McDaniels has earned that at this point to where I won't believe it until I actually see him wearing Packers colors, talking with Gutekunst and Mark Murphy at a press conference and going that route. So We will keep you updated all off season long on that. Jason, you mentioned, yes, the Bears lost, so they are out. The only team really left for me that I would care to not win the Super Bowl is the New England Patriots. I fully anticipate them to win this week against the Chargers, and that's something we could talk about right now. There's a lot going on in the playoffs. Obviously, it's divisional weekend. I think that's personally the best weekend in football. Conference championship games are obviously great. The Super Bowl is obviously great, but the best games seem to come from this weekend. And the matchups are Colts and Chiefs, Chargers, Patriots, Saints and Eagles, and Rams, Cowboys. The Cowboys won last night against the Seattle Seahawks. Good riddance to them. Pointed with myself that I said Seahawks instead of the name I normally have for them. I will allow you guys to infer what that actually is. But Jason, who do you like in these matchups? We'll do that real quick before we go into some of our off-season series stuff. But who do you like on Saturday and Sunday to advance to Championship Sunday?
I have a hard time picking any of the visiting teams. If there's one that I think could be a problem, I think it's the Chargers. They're probably the only one. But I've got the home teams in the NFC. You know, Eagles with a nice dramatic win over the Bears, but they're coming up against a really tough Saints team. And I think the Rams, although I'm not a huge believer in them, I think they take care of business because they're at home. And then so those two will face off. And the AFC, I think Kansas City wins their game. I just don't know if I don't know what to make of this year's Patriots. It's so hard to bet against them, and I'm with you. I'll throw Dallas in there as well. Those are the two teams, the Patriots and Dallas, that I really would prefer not to see advancing. But it's this first wild card weekend was everything we kind of hoped it would be. Even the what seemed like a really lifeless Ravens-Chargers game earlier today ended up with a flurry at the end. So this is what I wanted, was an exciting playoffs. And you know, fortunately, the officials are letting these teams play. I was really convinced that this season was going to come down to a call. There's still three more weeks for that to happen, playoff slate.
That it has. The Colts-Texans game was kind of meh, you know, but the rest of the games were pretty competitive until the end. The Ravens made a charge late to make that game interesting. You know, some good football this weekend, but I'm really looking forward to next weekend. I like the home teams in the NFC as well. I think the Rams are going to struggle a little bit with that Cowboys defense. I just think that at the end of the day, I trust Sean McVay and Jared Goff to dial one play up on offense more than I do Dak Prescott, who, Jason, I got to admit, he's a Cowboys player, and this is yucky, but I am growing to really enjoy watching him play over the last few years. I think, you know, he's not a great quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback. He just seems to have that whatever it is, and I enjoy watching that. But I think that the Rams win there. I think the Saints beat the Eagles. I know the Eagles just won in Chicago against a very tough Bears team that still sucks, but the magic just has to run out at some point. In New Orleans at the Superdome seems like a perfect place for that to happen. Chargers and Patriots is the game that has my eye the most just because of the quarterback matchup. Obviously, they're not on the field at the same time, but Phillip Rivers against Tom Brady, that's one first ballot Hall of Famer and a Hall of Very Good player right now with Phillip Rivers that could potentially, with a Super Bowl run or something here, work his way into Hall of Fame consideration. But I'll have my eye on that. But I do like the Patriots. They're in Foxborough. I don't bet against Brady and Belichick. I think it's that simple. It's Brady, it's Belichick. I've watched the same movie since 2001. I was 11 years old when they won their first Super Bowl. They're still doing it, and it's annoying as hell. But that's why they're as great as they are, because they win these games. The upset, if you will, that I'm picking the Colts to beat the Chiefs. And I have thought all year, for some reason, that the Chiefs were going to go one and done. Pat Mahomes is a great player. He should be a unanimous MVP award winner. But it's a first time for him in the playoffs. The Colts defense isn't great, but it is pretty good. And I think that Andrew Luck is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and he's got it rolling right now. I think they make enough plays to beat Kansas City and advance to Foxborough to play the Patriots in what I will then be calling the Josh McDaniels Bowl. So I have Colts and Patriots in the championship games on Sunday. Jason, we're not very good at doing off-season shows. We have talked about that before. So this year we are trying to commit to do better. Ways to do that. We're going to go through the entire roster this year and assign grades to them. And I want to start, I'm going to start tonight as a little bit more loaded than some of the others because I want to talk head coach, I want to talk general manager, and I want to talk quarterbacks. And we can start with the general manager situation. Let's talk about Brian Gutekunst because this one should take the longest. So if you want to go through moves that Brian Gutekunst made this year, the first one was trading Demaryius Randall for DeShone Kizer and flipping draft order in this year's draft in the fourth and the fifth round. Trading Demaryius Randall, in my opinion, was the right move. They just traded him for poor compensation. And I liked DeShone Kizer coming out of that draft as much as anybody did. But at the same time, when you're trading a contributor for somebody that you hope never plays, that's a rough go. But Demaryius Randall was somebody who had clearly worn out his welcome in the locker room. The veteran players in Green Bay wanted him cut after last year's debacle in Green Bay when they played the Bears. So I'm okay with getting rid of him. He cut Jordy Nelson, which is going to be a big topic of conversation, obviously. He signed Jimmy Graham. He signed Muhammad Wilkerson. He signed Bashaud Breeland in the middle of the season. And that's really kind of his big moves. I'll sign Tremont Williams, too. I apologize to Tremont Williams. Because obviously that counts. He drafted Jaire Alexander in the first round. He was an immediate contributor. He got an extra first-round pick in doing so. So that was a big deal. That was definitely a win for Gutekunst & Co. The rest of his draft class, the receivers, three rookie receivers that he picked, did a pretty good job through the season, but you weren't hoping for them to be instant contributors. Josh Jackson looked like a rookie cornerback, what a typical rookie cornerback looks like. Oren Burks kind of got lost in the shuffle and didn't really play. That was a guy they traded up for in the third round. Didn't go so good. And Cole Madison didn't play, so that's going to be an incomplete. We don't know what's going on there. Supposedly, the plan is still for him to play. At this point, that remains to be seen, and counting on Cole Madison would be a mistake at this point. So I'm going to give Brian Gutekunst the C+. His draft was okay, I thought. I thought he did a pretty good job there. Jimmy Graham was a free agent bust, and you can argue the reasons or whatever, but when you're paying a guy $10 million a year and maybe more, you need more than what Jimmy Graham gave you. Muhammad Wilkerson, I don't think it's fair to say anything on him. He played three games. It's really hard to say anything on how he would have done had he stayed healthy the entire season. Tremont Williams was a pretty good player for Green Bay this year. The Breeland signing is one that was encouraging because, with all due respect to Ted Thompson, he did a very good job in Green Bay, but that is a signing he never would have made. He would have let Tony Brown and Herb Waters and guys like that play instead of keeping tabs on a free agent that really helped the Packers and maybe somebody that they should be looking to re-sign to start next year. So that's my grade for Brian Gutekunst. I'm giving him a C+ to start this season. Jason, what is your grade for Mr. Gutekunst and why?
So I think if you go above a C, they have to have made the playoffs, and the Packers did not. So we can't go above a C there for me. You gave a C+, which is right on the cusp. All the moves that he made, I think that he set this because we can expect to see more out of the receivers next year, and that helps because you lost Jordy Nelson. Like you said, they've got to replace that and try to make moves to get better in the passing game. So I like those moves there. The Randall trade had to happen. Yes, Kizer, is he really the true de facto backup to Aaron Rodgers going into next season? There are some questions about whether or not he will be back. I don't see why you wouldn't, based on what you gave up and the investment that you've made. So I think Kaiser's back. So I think that was an okay move. You move on from Brett Hundley, which needed to happen, although Kizer proved to be about as effective when he did play. And he was put in a tough spot, obviously, in week 17. The guys weren't playing very hard. So you didn't get a full strength, effort from the Packers. The thing that I look at is what he didn't do, and it's hard to say that these were failures by Gutekunst because there were a lot of other decision making factors that he did not have control over. But the reality is, they didn't keep Fuller, they didn't get Mac, they didn't get Allen Robinson, they got outbid for that. Those were all by the Bears. And there were just some moves that unfortunately he was not able to make, that Packers have to find a way to come out of the negotiation table a little better than they did. The Graham signing at the time, I think, was okay because the assumption was that the Packers and Rodgers could get more out of him than Wilson and the Seahawks did. They're not known for being a great offensive team. That was not the case. Jimmy Graham is turning out to be a bit of a problem, and I think he's back next year because of the money. So that ends up being a thing that you have to kind of hold Gutekunst accountable for. I would say all in all, I would go with just a solid C. I won't go C plus. I'll just go solid C. I would have liked to have seen him. I think if he gets one of those players, I have to believe, you know, especially if it's Robinson or Mac, I have to believe that puts at least one more win on the board, if not more. So that's why, you know, he finished with the C, finishes average. Hopefully next year it's a little bit better, but if he wants to be above a C, they've got to make the playoffs. If he wants an A, they've got to go deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, the Mac thing I think has been discussed a lot, so I don't want to get too much into that. The Robinson thing, I mean, he had a good day today against the Eagles, definitely, no doubt, but I don't know how much he changes things if he's in Green Bay. So, yeah, C plus, C, somewhere in that area I think is definitely fair to give him that grade. Head coach, Mike McCarthy, the Packers obviously fired him after a December 2nd game against the Arizona Cardinals, in which they lost at the buzzer. Mason Crosby missed a field goal that ultimately led to Mike McCarthy's demise. Maybe this isn't fair to McCarthy, but, hey, when your team is bad enough through the court, and I know he was in a tough spot, I'm not blaming it all on him. Anybody who listens to the show knows that I wouldn't do that. But Mike McCarthy gets an F. And when you get fired during the season, I think that's a fair grade because you look at some of the games. Green Bay had a chance to win against Minnesota in week 2. They didn't. You can talk about the roughing the passer call, but they had several chances through that game to put that game away, and they did not do it. That was one of several games that they lost down the stretch of the year, and it was going to look a lot like that. You know, Ty Montgomery makes a rogue decision. I understand that. At the same time, ultimately that lies on the head coach as well because the player was willing to do that. And then you go into, you know, his team's just found ways to lose games they didn't have any business losing, and that's why they're sitting at 6-9-1, drafting 12th in the draft instead of us talking about maybe a playoff matchup next week in New Orleans or L.A., we're talking about a game that they played today. So maybe this is harsh, but I'm giving Mike McCarthy an F. Jason, where you got?
You know, we should probably talk about, just real quick, your thoughts on the Mercedes Lewis snippet that came out earlier this week where he was talking about how surprised he was that when Mike McCarthy called a play earlier this season that Rodgers just nixed it right away in the huddle, called his own play, and the play went for 40 yards. When you have that kind of stuff going on, and I know that Aaron Rodgers deserves to be able to do some of those things, and he can change plays on the line of scrimmage, and, you know, it may have been that. You know, sometimes players tell stories, and it gets convoluted, or it kind of gets misinterpreted. You know, I'm sure it happens all across the league. It's not unique. But we heard a lot of stories this season about how Mike McCarthy seemed disconnected from the team, and it just didn't seem like they were really buying into what it was that he was doing. When you reach that point, you lose the team, you lose the locker room, all the cliches that kind of go along with that. And so I would have to agree. I mean, you don't finish out the season and your team doesn't win, but 5 games on your watch, or should have been 6. The tie in week 2 was a sham, but that's still very poor when you've got Aaron Rodgers starting all of your games and then to lose to the Cardinals at home. I'm not giving anybody a pass for that. I mean, you know, some of the stories that Joe told were great. You know, he had some great interactions with Mike McCarthy, and Mike McCarthy's a solid individual. You know, he's a great guy. I've actually heard other stories about him as a person outside of football, and he's very different than what we heard in the media when he would get in front of the media, and obviously that was just kind of by design. He just sort of was who he was as the head coach of the Packers. But, yeah, that was just kind of a failure on all levels there, and the Packers had to make that move. It's unfortunate because they won a championship with him, and he's for many, many years, decades probably, as one of the winningest coaches in the team's history. But I would give him an F as well. But, you know, don't know if you have any thoughts on the Mercedes Lewis comments. And I don't hear anybody talking about the fact that in that conversation was also Martellus Bennett, unless I completely missaw who was in the room with him. And so that right there just kind of discredits it a little bit to me. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that whole rage that seems to be overtaking Packers fans right now.
Yeah, I do, and it'll be a good transition into the quarterback room, which is going to be our first grading point this offseason. But as far as he who must not be named, I don't give a damn what he has to say ever. If your last name is Bennett and you play in the NFL, I don't care what you have to say ever. So, I mean, as far as him, that's whatever to me. Lewis giving that story out, though, I mean, that's a big deal, and that falls on the head coach and the quarterback. Because, you know, the head coach's job is to get his players to buy in. You saw, you know, snippets this year. Aaron Nagler posted a video of, like, a screen they ran against the Bills on third and forever. And, he's quoted it and said, just punt on third down. And Devontae Adams liked it. You've got players in the locker room questioning, you know, should they have gone for it in Seattle? And Tremont Williams says, that's the coach's decision. That's not my decision. Or stuff like that. Some of that rests on the head coach. Some of it rests on the quarterback, because the quarterback's job is to do as he's instructed. And this is getting very Brett Favre-like in Green Bay from the standpoint of the quarterback basically not respecting and ignoring the head coach. Now, if history repeats itself, then that would tell you the next head coach is going to give Rodgers kind of a jerk on the choke chain there and get him back in line, so to speak. That remains to be seen, but that falls on the head coach and the quarterback. But as far as Mercedes Lewis, I mean, I appreciate him telling the story because it gives some insight, obviously, and I do like that. But the other guy who was in the room, I don't give a damn what he has to say ever. And that's going to be my point on him whenever he comes up. But let's go to the quarterback room. Obviously, the Packers went through – Brett Hundley was traded in the preseason. The Packers got a sixth-round pick for him. That alone – I didn't mention that with Gutekunst, but that's a big deal. Anytime you can get a draft pick for somebody who's not going to play for you, that matters. Aaron Rodgers, his stat line for the year, at the end of the year, he started all 16 games, which, considering the knee injury, nagging leg injuries, and a concussion at the end of the year, which we'll get to, that's a big deal that he started all 16 games. He finished with a 62% completion percentage, 4,400 yards, 25 touchdowns, two interceptions, and a 97.6 quarterback rating. DeShone Kizer was a disaster anytime he came in. Now, he didn't come in under the best circumstances, which is why I give him a little bit of leeway, but he basically handed the Bears 10 points when he came in and played against Chicago, and he was not good against Detroit. Honestly, it was – I mean, he only threw one interception against the Lions. It very easily could have been three or four more with some of the footballs he was throwing in that game. I'm giving the quarterback room a C-. Rodgers, his counting stats, his touchdown interception ratio, it all looks nice. But this is where, when you have these conversations, you have to watch the games that are being played also. You can't just read the box score and determine who played well based on that. Now, is Rodgers playing in an offense that was Rodgers fully bought in? No. Is that his fault? To some degree, yes. But it was very clear that, I mean, you know, the highlight of the season, Jason, was the Packers coming back against Chicago in week one. And something we haven't really talked about is the Packers were crap for three quarters in that game. Obviously, a lot gets erased when you have a 24-point comeback against a great defense like Chicago. But they were bad for three quarters in that game. He gutted it out the next week against Minnesota. They deserved a better fate than what they got. But still, they had chances to score touchdowns. They didn't. They kicked a lot of field goals in the red zone this year. Rodgers simply was not Aaron Rodgers. And when you're paying a quarterback to be superhuman, is it fair to ask a quarterback to be superhuman every single week? No. That's why, you know, Tom Brady every single week is in a enviable position. If I'm Aaron Rodgers, I envy him, because when Aaron Rodgers doesn't play well, more often than not, Green Bay loses. The last time, and this is off the top of my head, Green Bay won a big game in which Rodgers didn't play well or great in was the Bears. Rodgers was not great in that game. He threw two interceptions, got him out to an early lead, but he threw two picks and was kind of lost throughout most of the, really after the second or the midway point of the second quarter, was not very good. So with that in mind, the Packers need to find a way to get to play well or find a way to win when he doesn't play great. But at the same time, they're paying him a gazillion dollars over the next 4 years. And, I mean, that's a lot of money. He's got to play like Aaron Rodgers, and he didn't do that this year. So I'm giving the quarterback room a C-minus. DeShone Kizer played poor when he was in there. Honestly, he could push this thing to a D as a whole. But Aaron Rodgers does enough, I think, here to save them from that sort of ranking. I'm giving the quarterback room a C-minus. And then you go to the end of the year where Rodgers ends the year with a concussion in a game he didn't have to play in, should not have played in, and we talked about that last week, so I don't want to rehash all that. But I got a C-minus for this room. Jason, where are you?
The fact that he came out and played in Week 17, even though it was ill-advised, maybe pushes the position to a D-plus for me, because I will give a D for all of them because of all the throws that Rodgers missed. I mean, he only threw two interceptions, so when you look at what he should have done, I mean, if you told me before the season started that Rodgers was only going to throw two picks all year, I would have thought that they're still playing right now. So that's majorly underachieving. It's not well. It's not good. I saw way too many screen grabs and too many shots of the offense missing plays, missing throws, you know, injuries, all that kind of stuff aside. You know, like I've said many times and I tweeted many times, if you're going to be out there and you're going to play, then you have to perform. If you can't do that, if for whatever reason the injury was causing any problems for Rodgers, then you've got to make a decision with whether or not you being out there is helping or hurting your team. Now, obviously, what we saw from Kizer in Week 17, we can assume that had he played from Week 2 on, the Packers, you know, they'd be lucky to have overtaken the Cardinals for having, you know, they would have gone toe-to-toe for having the worst record in the league. So I don't think it would have been any better with Kizer. It would have been a lot worse with Kizer, actually. But Aaron Rodgers is, like you said, he's expected to perform at a certain level. He can't be God out there all the time, and I think that hopefully this team is going to build itself up so that he doesn't have to do that. Would be nice if Aaron Jones is healthy and can play 16 games. We haven't seen that yet out of him, but that the quarterback play was very, very bad this year. It was abysmal. Rodgers missed some throws. They were just very off in all phases and all categories. So I top it out at a D+. I'm a little less optimistic than you are in terms of what it all equated to, as it was just such a bad season. And unfortunately, one of the reasons, while I know he made a bunch of plays and Rodgers made a bunch of throws that helped the Packers win a few games this year, he missed so many others that could have helped them be in a better position to have played better.
Absolutely, and I think that's the biggest concern. I don't think either one of us, Jason, would say that we think Aaron Rodgers is washed up, because there were plenty of glimpses this year of Aaron Rodgers. You know, that game we went to in San Francisco, the throw to Devontae Adams was vintage. The throw to Devontae Adams, it's going to be a lot of throws to Devontae Adams in here, but the throw to Devontae Adams to beat the Jets was vintage. The bomb down the middle of the field to Robert Tonyan against Seattle. I mean, there's plenty of examples of Aaron Rodgers still being Aaron Rodgers. The big thing with the Packers is the new coach has to get him to buy in, whoever that is. And I think anybody on this show that listens to this show feels at this point the same way I do, that the new coach is going to be Josh McDaniels. Josh McDaniels' biggest job, and even if it's not him, is going to be getting Rodgers to buy in. And it's very similar to when Mike McCarthy got here. His job was to get Brett Favre to buy in, and then to develop Aaron Rodgers, obviously, as well. But that's what he needs to do. That's what they need to do. And that's the biggest thing now, because next year when we're having this conversation, Jason, first of all, I hope we're having it in February after a dramatic Super Bowl victory. And, well, no, forget that. I don't want dramatic. I don't need the blood pressure in my life at this point. But a Super Bowl victory, and we're giving the quarterback room an A, because when you're paying $134 million, you expect A performances. And there's – I mean – not to go all Bob McGinn here, but at the same time, and there are reasons for this, you know, like Aaron Rodgers, when he plays against the Bears, is playing against the Bears defense, and Mitchell Trubisky is playing against the Packers defense. But you can't be outplayed by guys like Mitchell Trubisky and Josh Rosen and all kinds of average to below average quarterbacks when you're Aaron Rodgers. And, I mean, everybody knows when I say because you're Aaron Rodgers or because he's Aaron Rodgers, they know what that means. Hall of Fame quarterback, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, the best quarterback in the history of the Green Bay Packers, and arguably the most talented quarterback in the history of professional football. That's a lot of accolades right now, because I know that's going to happen this offseason. Packers fans, please take my advice when I say this. Don't have the GOAT debate with the Patriots, because right now, I'm not saying Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time, because I don't think he is. The best quarterback I have personally ever seen play in person is Aaron Rodgers, and after that, it's Peyton Manning. And Brady falls in somewhere further down that list. But there's a lot of things that are going on right now to where we should just kind of sit back and say, you know what, that's not a conversation worth having right now. We just want our quarterback to be back playing well and playing in these playoff games. I mean, quarterbacks who started this weekend's games, Deshaun Watson, not better than Aaron Rodgers, not even in the same stratosphere. Lamar Jackson, same thing. Nick Foles, Mitchell Trubisky. The only quarterbacks who are really in the same stratosphere as Rodgers that played this weekend are Phillip Rivers and Andrew Luck. And obviously the Packers have to build a team around the quarterback. That matters. But next year when we have this conversation, Jason, the answer needs to be A, he had an MVP-type season. Maybe he wins an MVP. I don't know. But that's the conversation we need to be having, not, man, what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers? And that's really a conversation, save for the run-the-table run where the Packers won, I think it was 8 games in a row, to reach the NFC Championship game. He hasn't played well. He hasn't played up to his standard. I shouldn't say he hasn't played well. He hasn't played up to his standard. And the Packers need him to play up to his standard in order to get back to and eventually win a Super Bowl. Jason, we got a little bit of time left. You know, we talked about the coaching search. We've talked about, you know, grades for this team and stuff like that. Real quick, I just want to go with, and we'll have some moments like this and we'll break them down further in depth, but something else I want to have for a conversation series here for the offseason is, for specific game, what is your favorite specific game? When you look back on this season, what is going to be your favorite game from this year?
That's easy and obvious. It's the Niners game. We got a chance to sit together in the stands. It was a walk-off win. Anytime I get a chance to go to Lambeau Field, I don't take it for granted. It was an exciting one. It's Monday Night Football. It was all the things that I wanted. So it's a selfish pick for me. But in a season where there were so few to choose from anyway, you know, I could have gone with the Bears game in the first week of the season. It was probably the most exciting game of the year, even though our game was a walk-off. But, you know, for me, it's about the other things and all of the entire experience of it all. So it was, for me, it was the Niners game.
Yeah, I'm with you. When I go with specific moments, I'll talk about the Bears game, but for game in general, that's everything that goes around it. My dad was there. My brother was there. My wife was sick in a hotel room, which that kind of put a damper on it, I suppose. But that was the wedding weekend. Anybody who's listened to the show for a while, we've talked about me getting married for like 2 full years now, it feels like. That was the culmination of everything. And the Packers have a big win. Jason, that's the first game that you and I have been to together where we've actually sat together. They win on a walk-off field goal by Mason Crosby, who has kind of a redemption story after missing 17 field goals the previous week against the Detroit Lions. Sometimes when I'm having a bad day, I still kind of sit and watch that video because the Packers winning makes me happy. But, you know, the two of us kind of jumping and just the sheer joy on our faces there, that was fun to watch. But, yeah, I'm going to go with the Niners game as well. We'll talk about more stuff as this offseason progresses, and we will be here week to week all offseason long. We may have a week here or there that kind of dies out a little bit, but I know we said this last year, but you got to believe me when I say this, we will be here all offseason long. That's going to do it for this version of the offseason show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. Follow the show on Twitter. It's at Packer Pulse. You can follow me. I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason. He is at Jason Perrone. Want to thank Joe Arrigo for coming on our show. That's at Joe, A-R-R-I-G-O. Thanks to him for coming on, giving us some insight on the Packers coaching search. Thank you for the stories that you told and really just coming and talking ball with us really at the end of the day. Want to thank everybody for listening to us all season long. And the NFL playoffs are here, so the Packers aren't playing, and that sucks. There's a lot of good football here, And I think the best way to end this show is, after further review, the Bears still suck.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.